Well, hello and welcome to the latest episode of what I'm going to affectionately call the Classics World Chat Show, just with few and loose women and celebrities. And this time we're talking, well, we're on our marks, gentlemen, because we're talking about our favourite brands, our favourite car marks, the ones that we would choose to own for the rest of our lives, basically. So roll the credits and we'll get into it. So, gents, we love cars, obviously. It's sort of given. We don't love fashion, clearly.
Territory, doesn't it?
But let's talk about the people who make them, the manufacturers, because obviously we have quite a diverse taste in this channel. We cover everything from the mundane to the not multi-million, but near enough. But of course, there are those favourites that stand out. So what we've done is we talked between us as what our favourite brands were, the ones that stand out to us, the ones that you'd wear a T-shirt of, or what have you, that you'd consider yourself a fan of. So, Mr. Whedon, we'll start with the elder statesman of the group. What brands stand out to you?
Age before beauty is what you're saying, yes.
No, quite. I know which way my brains
are. First up, I must just give a big shout out to Bonhams Online, who are hosting us today. And we've had a little chance to walk around their very fabulous facility with a manner of cars. So we've been able to indulge in some of our passion for marks.
Indeed.
Today. So,
and they've provided decoration. Those of you who are saying decoration.
Yes, there you go. It's not quite Spartan as it usually is.
It may not be the last time you hear the word Porsche in this conversation, but anyway, we'll come
spoilers.
Back to that. Exactly.
But anyway, there's a whale tail on the back.
So anyway, sorry, I guess my sense was actually, as ever, narrowing it down to three. Because I could have probably listed a plethora of marks that I wanted to feature. Yeah. But in the end, so I was trying to go for perhaps a smorgasbord that perhaps showed that variety. So first up, I'm going to go with Honda.
Okay.
But I don't actually even know much about Honda as a mark. And I was sort of reading up on them. But I just love what they stand for. Okay. I think they mark their 70th anniversary next year in 2026.
Oh, wow.
I love everything they do. They're so kind of omnipresent in all things kind of transport, because they do motors for boats.
Everything from the cub to a superboat.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Lawnmowers.
Biggest market share in India for bikes is Honda.
The most best-selling vehicle of all time ever was the Super Cub.
Yep. Yeah. So they're so good at engineering, and then what they do it well.
Yeah.
So whether it's a bike or a powerboat or a lawnmower or a car.
Or a humanoid robot.
Rest
in peace, I suppose.
So I just think I love what they stand for. And the most bizarre thing as well is also the paradox of it all. Like, you'll get a granny spec Honda Jazz or an Ayrton Senna inspired Honda NSX or a S2000 or a Honda Accord.
Civic Type R, anything.
Yeah, all of those things. So I love the sort of the breadth of it. And it's easy to get a bit disillusioned by the more modern stuff that they've come out with. But I still love that kind of innate sort of purity of concept that Honda are always synonymous with.
When is peak Honda for you era-wise? So it must be a time, right?
Yeah. Well, definitely that kind of... Oh, hello.
Well, that didn't last.
Roll the credits again.
Continue.
We'll just keep going.
Yeah.
Peak era would probably be that kind of NSX S2000 sort of era.
Yeah.
An ice cream van.
Oh, is it a Honda ice cream?
Yeah. When the music stops, it means they've run out of stock. But
inside as well.
Exactly. Yes.
Little eco spaceship pod.
Oh, but I mean, that's the point. They've invested in electric and hybrid and hydrogen. They've sort of hedged their bets in the way that some manufacturers have not. And I think that's what makes them a global success story. I mean, the first brand from Japan, at least, to bring out their premium version with Acura in the mid-80s.
Yes, of course.
So they led from Lexus and Toyota.
It's weird. That depends by territory, doesn't it? Because we never got Acura.
No, exactly.
All over in the States.
But we got a lot of the cars, just not badged as Acura.
Yeah, exactly.
I also love their motorsport. You know, they've always been big with touring cars, with bikes.
Bike racing, well, they were historically very successful in
their
bike racing.
Their love affair with Formula One, just they're in and out. I think Honda for me, big ticks all around. So,
agreed.
So next up for me would be Jaguar Shock.
No!
Who would have thunk it?
Oh, well, there's your shocker for the YouTube thumbnail.
Hold the front page. I don't know, I think I've always just grown up liking Jaguars. They were a sort of attainable British luxury, I suppose. I also love the underdog story of Jaguar, the sort of William Lyons battling against the establishment back in the very early days. And then even when it sort of fell into the clutches of what became British Leyland, it still managed to sort of become that sort of independent outpost. Succeeding where Triumph and sort of Rover arguably sort of failed in that big conglomerate. and you know, the ups and downs of the company through Ford ownership and then later Tata and where we are now.
Where
with
we are now.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I kind of, I'm still nervous about where Jaguar is going as a nameplate. I think it's going to be a shadow of its former self, dare I say. But
I think quite crucially with the Tata era as well. I mean, obviously it's owned by an Indian company now, but they're still built, designed. Yeah. They're all still interesting.
Still British.
Yeah. And I think that's a rare
thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and actually it's hats off to both Ford and Tata that they never tried to take that away. There was always rumours that they'd try and build cars elsewhere, but
never did.
They do build Land Rovers and stuff in the Czech Republic, I think.
I believe they do, yeah.
That kind of stuff. But yeah, Jaguar itself always stayed very much innately British, and arguably the cars that came out in that late Ford era, 2008, things like XFs and X150s, are actually some of the best cars that the company's ever made.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've always had a hankering with Jaguars. Owned a couple in my time, wouldn't rule out owning another one in the future.
Not at all.
So yeah, and then my third mark is probably the one I've grown up with the most, and that's Ford. Always been a Blue Oval fan.
Ford family, aren't you?
My dad had company car Fords. My mum's owned loads of Fords. I've owned Fords. I went to the Dagenham factory as a birthday treat, believe it or not. Wow. So when they were still making cars.
That must have been a day.
me and my pretend friends turned up. But it was, I mean, for me, that was magical to go around the factory and actually see the cars.
I can see that being cool, yeah.
I mean, nowadays, Ford don't make any cars in
the
UK.
They've just closed down the plant, haven't they?
They've still got the diesel engine plant in Dagenham, but you know, how long has that got to go with legislation?
Well, we're making diesels, yeah.
All that kind of stuff. And they've got some sort of electrification centre up in Halewood, sort of the remnants of that. But I don't know, I like what Ford stood for, that kind of no-nonsense, built a car to a price, market it well. Ford's were very rarely market leading in terms of how they drove and everything.
Controversially, they very rarely make the best car in class.
No.
But they market it the best.
Yes.
They had killer marketing.
Marketing power. Like
every man cars.
And just cars built for the market. And therefore you'd be able to buy a base model popular or a top of the range XR or gear spec and everything else in between. And whether you were talking about a Mark III Cortina, which I know you sort of like, so we had that project car.
Still missing.
You know, to sort of more iconic stuff like XR3s and Capris and all that sort of stuff. I think they've always just had that knack of building cars that people want.
Yeah.
And therefore covering everything from the family to the company cars to the proper car enthusiasts that want something a bit sporty. And again, Ford's got great motorsport pedigree, and I think that's always
massive.
Yeah, the only mark that seems to be holding value as of late is Fast Ford.
That's actually true. You can surely bet on a Fast Ford.
Exactly. Yeah. Testament to the Ford shows that we do. You know,
well, quite right.
Come to the classic Ford show or Ford Fair at Silverstone. You know, thousands of enthusiasts
of all generations and all ages. Yeah,
yeah, and it does, and it then generally spans the generations. They tend to be sort of fall into the two camps of the more modern stuff and the very classic stuff.
Mm.
But
what I think speaks volumes of Ford is, in a lot of countries, but particularly in Britain, is that even if you're not necessarily a Ford person, I'm not a Ford person, we didn't have Fords growing up, Ford has still been in your life at some point for pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
You know, my dad had a Mondeo at one point. I love that Cortina we had. And I dare say you've had Ford, or you know what Ford's are, friends or whatever. Even if you've never owned one and you're not a Ford person, Ford has still touched your life in some way.
Yeah, and permeates.
Yeah, and there's not many other brands you can say that.
And a bit like the Jaguar thing, I find myself feeling a bit sad of where Ford of Europe is at present.
EcoSport, anyone?
You know, they make a big play that their best-selling vehicle is the Transit. That is
their thing. That's the backbone of Britain.
Yeah.
For whatever that's worth.
Built in Turkey. But, I just think that it's been a slight fall from grace as Ford of Great Britain and Ford of Germany effectively became Ford of Europe. And that sort of combined enterprise built fantastic cars, but they just didn't manage to compete on the world stage.
Yeah.
Mm. And now, what is Ford of Europe? They sell the Transit, rebodied VWs, you know, the Ford Explorer EV as an ID4.
And the Capri EV.
You know, I mean, it's just, I don't know, I just think Ford, as we know it here in the UK, has completely lost its identity. Yeah. And that's why you don't see them in the sales charts anymore, right?
So yeah, that's true.
And I think, far from being doom and gloom, you've almost got to celebrate what happened rather than lament that it is no more. And whether you're a Ford person or not, they had their glory days of all eras.
Yeah.
And even a non-Ford person will still find one model, at least, that resonates with them.
Well, it's interesting because last week I went up to Cumbria to see Borough Motorworks unveil their Allan Mann Racing Edition Mark 1 Escort. And it's just the first of a run of cars that they're doing in tribute with Ford, proper official licensed products from, as you know, continuation chassis numbers from Ford. And they're going to do a series of cars that pay homage to the sort of Ford of Europe back catalogue.
Lineage, yeah.
So we'll see an RS Spec Mark 1 Escort come out later this year. And, you know, that wouldn't be possible if they hadn't got such this fantastic back catalogue of iconic cars.
Well, the proof in the pudding, you don't see other brands doing that, do you?
No, exactly.
I'm looking forward to the Probe when they do that one.
Well, you know what? I did joke about that. I said, oh, what cars are coming next? And they're quite tight-lipped about the cars that are coming. But I said, oh, do a Ford Maverick one for me.
That's a Ford to be proud
of. That Mazda-based sort of whatever it was that they did. You know, so, and of course, they laughed, I think. And a P100 pickup or something like that. I think that's for me why Fords have sort of always resonated. Iconic cars for everyone. So that's my top three. So,
I can appreciate that. Absolutely. Yeah. Over to you, sir.
Well, mine are probably equally as predictable, to be honest. Starters, we'll go with probably the most accessible brand on my list, and that's kind of saying something actually, because it's BMW, believe it or not.
Oh, what a shock.
Yeah, I know.
Former E30 owner goes with BMW.
It would have funk it. I mean, for me, what makes a mark is firstly identity and secondly consistency.
Yeah.
And I think BMW has done that down to a T. It's sort of perfected the sporting saloon with the O2 and sort of evolved that through to the 3 Series, the E21, E30, blah, just carried on. Obviously, we have the slightly larger cars. We've got the 5 Series, which are a little more long-legged, sort of an in-betweener. If you want something with an estate, then that's where you want to go.
Yep.
And then they had the 7 Series as well. You love that E38.
I do like the 7 Series. Yeah, no denying
that. Joe Dawes and his E38.
Yes, thanks to our guys on Fast Car for that one.
Yes, indeed. And I think it's they've perfected. They've always had a sporting edge to whatever they've made.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be the sportiest, but an E38 will always be a little bit pointier than a W140 will be, et cetera, with that sort of thing as well. There's also the M cars, inexplicably just some of the greatest sports cars that have ever been, from the E30 all the way up to the F80, dare I say, and beyond that with GAT, should you be so brave. on the other end, they also have Alpina, which are quick as you like, but also will just absolutely destroy miles on the Autobahn. That's what they were made for, and there was almost no other car that will do it as well, to be honest.
Yeah. Some of the best diesel engines ever made from BMW.
Also true. I mean, latter day less so, but earlier stuff is still very good indeed. I think it's just pretty tough to go wrong until you get up to the more modern era. But cap it at about Y2K, maybe
somewhere 2005. Around there,
I've got a couple of questions for you. Why is it that a 5 Series wagon is typically better looking than the saloon? I would think that's almost
always has been. I think outside of maybe E39 sort of generation,
I think the estate's better.
The wagons look better, I think.
Yeah.
And also, there's a phenomenon with a certain era of BMW. I'm probably going with the Bangle era, where they started out as, I think, properly minging car. But actually,
that 7 Series is absolutely hideous.
With age, suddenly, they don't look so bad.
Do you know what? I'm glad you said that. Because when the first 1 Series came out, for years, my dad was on about such a big, ugly car, too bloated. And the other day, I saw one with an M Sport body kit on the big wheels from the factory. I'm like, that's really cool. Yeah, that looks great. I mean,
that Bangle 7 Series is irredeemable for me. I don't think it will ever look good, no matter how long you give it.
But E63 6 Series?
E63 is still...
I'm a fan of one of those.
Same front end, the dodgy headlights, and the Sid the Sloth spread.
But this is still controversial now.
Yes. But the E60, great looking
looks
car.
Looks fantastic.
Great looking car. E61, even better. You're right. Other question? Or was it just the estates?
No, that was it. That was just the two things about the styling. So estates and the styling was
I mean, consistency for BMW. They found their niche and they just carried on doing the same thing, but better.
And do you remember the debate they had, BMW, about switching to front-wheel drive?
They still flirt with it now.
The 1 Series that's...
Yeah, the 1 Series and the 2 Series.
The 1 and the 2 Series are front-wheel drive. That's awful. But it's interesting. I think BMW did a survey a few years ago where they asked the